Hello. And welcome to the 2019 Farmer of the Year Awards, live from Parliament House in Canberra. It's a magnificent venue. There's some paintings and murals all around us today. There are big hitters in industry and also in the world of politics walking past at every note. And we're in a room full of big hitters in the world of agriculture as well. It's the 10th time that ABC Rural and the Continent Group has handed out the Farmer of the Year Awards. And what a decade to celebrate. In 2010, West Australian dairy farmer Ross Woodhouse was the first winner of the award. And since then, we've had winners from right around Australia. Victorian grain grower Rob Brewalt, South Australian orchardist Robert Green, cattle, sheep and wine producer from Tasmania, Matt Dunbabin, Tasmanian cherry grower Tim Reid, Peter Coolman from South Australia, who literally makes the most of every drop of rainfall that falls in his area. It can be quite meagre some years, I'm sure he'll tell you. Queensland cane grower and mulch supplier Matthew Keith, Andrew Bulmer from Lindanoe in Victoria, who grows spinach that ends up on plates around Australia, and you've undoubtedly eaten some. They're great stories. Stories of resilience. Yes, sometimes it involves hardship, but it also involves risk, success, and the ability to grow something and send it around the nation, or indeed to the world. It should be celebrated. And that's what's so great about being here for the Country Hour, is to celebrate some of these stories and talk about the people behind it, what makes them tick, and most of all, what can we learn from people like this and gain from their experience to hopefully bring forward the next generation of farmers or the next business idea of those who are already out there on the land. And it's my great pleasure to tell you who this year's winner are. And we're going back to Tasmania. Just before I tell you who they are, we haven't had a winner from New South Wales yet or the Northern Territory. So hopefully through the next decade, that's a challenge to some of you farmers listening out there today. Our winners this year, though, are Tasmanians. They're just down the road from previous winners of this award as well. It's incredible. Susie and Jared Daly are with us. Their farm is incredible, and we're going to learn about it now. But first things first, congratulations, guys. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about your potato and incredibly diverse business from there in just a minute. But first things first, you're a second winner from in this Denali area of Tasmania. What's so special about where you're from?
We're right on the coast in on the east coast of Tasmania, and it's just an amazing place to live. So I'm not surprised.
And do you know Matt Dunbabin, the other winner from your region?
Oh, I know Matt really well. We actually leased ground off him to grow potatoes.
That's fantastic. There's something in the water in that part of Tasmania. Now, it's not about Matt. He had his moment. Let's talk about your business and the incredible things that you do. How do you describe it to people, what you produce on your farm and what you do from there?
We are pretty proud of everything that we do in our business. We bring it back to taste, and I hate waste, so that's why a couple of years ago I tried to look at how we could diversify so we could use our whole crop.
And what did that diversity mean?
So I had two ideas, that we could make potato vodka and that we could make value-added gourmet potato salad mash, etc. And I always thought that only one would go forward, but they both went forward and cost us a lot of money.
But it's incredible to think something like that's been successful, Jared. Normally when you hear people deciding to diversify, you hear, oh, I tried 10 different things and it was the 11th that won. You tried two things and two things worked.
Yeah, and it didn't just happen. It was a lot of hard work and a lot of help from people all over the place. We used mentors. We used whatever we could grab to help us to get to where we are today.
And as the bells go off in Canberra, that means politicians will be rushing somewhere in Parliament House if you're wondering what that sound is. Jared, to do all of the value adding, you've got to grow a lot of spuds, don't you? Tell us about that operation.
Yeah, we grow about 400 acres a year, and out of that we've got about 5,000 tonne.
5,000 tonne of potato.
And out of that, because we wash potatoes, we get a lot of second grade potatoes, we call, not so much waste. There's not much wrong with them. You can eat them. They're as good as anything. So as soon as you come up with the idea of value adding them, so down that track we went.
And the value add you did, so it was really about cutting down waste to begin with. Has that been successful then with all your different value added products?
It certainly has. Our gin has been amazingly successful, and it's just really humbling for us to now know that we probably have created another 20 jobs in Tasmania, which jobs are precious in our area.
How many people do you employ?
About 45 people now.
And what's that side of the business like? I'd imagine when you get into farm and all of a sudden you're running a sizeable business, what has that been like for your skills and the operation itself?
That's probably been one of the tests. Jared and I just started off together, basically, you know, crawling along the ground, picking them up and putting them in buckets, and to actually grow into what we are today. But we have got amazing people working for us, and we, one of our strengths is that we always put our hand out for help, and we've been lucky enough to have lots of people help us.
So when you started producing vodka and gin and all these other alcoholic products, was it easier to attract staff?
I was at the distillery at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I made a phone call to a man on the other side of the world because we couldn't figure out how to get the methanol out of the vodka, and he luckily said, "I'm going to tell you, my partner will kill you," but he was instrumental in helping me from the other side of the world. So it just goes to show, if you reach out to people, they will help you.
And what's the next step then? If potato salad's worked and all these different types of alcohol have worked, what do you do next?
We now have just bought our first lot of barrels, and we're going to make some rum because we're by the sea and we think it adds to our story, and we just want to stay a little bit different because everybody in Tasmania is making whiskey. So we are lucky enough to have a man that worked for another rum distillery, and he's come on board to help us.
So the diversification never stops.
Never stops. You can't stand still in farming. You always have to keep adding to, you know, what you're doing.
And Jared, before, you've just been handed the award, the paparazzi have taken you away for photos and so forth, but I noticed as well during the photos you've got a lot of your kids here today as well. Are they a big part of your business?
Yes, three of our kids actually work in our business. Yeah, very, very important to us.
What have they added to, as you've grown and so forth? Or is that a scary thing to admit they're doing a good job on the farm?
They're doing a brilliant job. I'll just tell you a little story. Last night we took our kids out for tea, and one of them mentioned that I brought a drone for them, but nothing I even never knew I ever bought a drone. But apparently there's a drone coming.
And is that a part of the success of your farm as well? Not only that it's grown and you have employees and so forth and you've diversified, but you've also created an environment where your kids can be involved in the business long term.
Without diversifying, they probably would never have come back to the farm, and we are hearing that from a lot of farmers that, you know, their children, it's got too hard. So it's been a great thing for us to have our children involved.
And what does it mean, this is the Farmer of the Year Award, but what does it mean to you both as a couple to win this award together?
I just think it means that we started, you know, with very small beginnings, and that if we can win it, there's some amazing farmers out there doing some amazing things. So I would encourage them to actually enter into the award, because we're not competition enterers.
That's nice to hear. Jared, what does it mean to you?
Very much what Susie said. We're very proud to win it. But like Susie said, if anyone out, any farmers out there are willing to really put their neck on the chopping block, it will happen if you find the right people to help you.
Well, Jared and Susie Daly, our Farmers of the Year for 2019, our 10th Farmer of the Year for these awards, please give them a big round of applause. Congratulations. Thoroughly deserved. We'll invite our next guest here on the stage. You're listening to The Country Hour. Warwick Long with you from Parliament House, where we're handing out the 2019 Farmer of the Year Awards. Some of the awards have already been run and won, so they're the people I can talk to. Some are still to come. You'll have to keep an eye on social media to learn who those winners are. Our next guest, though, is the Young Farmer of the Year, Ben Martin, who has a really interesting story to tell. Ben is actually about my age, around 35. I've got much more grey hair than he is. It shows you must be a relaxing world in industry running a huge operation Action and leading a bunch of industry groups. So we're going to find out about that now. Ben, first things first, congratulations on being the Young Farmer of the Year.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's quite an honour to be awarded this title and really appreciate it.
You're a big mango producer. We're not talking small fry here. Tell us about your business.
Yeah, so our original farm started back in 1990 when Mum and Dad first originally started in Bowen up in North Queensland. And we've slowly grown over the years to where we are now. And, you know, we're still growing, still in the phase of planting more trees and investing heavily in the industry that we believe in.
So how many mangoes are you sending to market every year?
This year we're forecasting to send about 150,000 trays to market this year, which isn't a huge number compared to some of the other larger growers, but we service a number of key retailers in Australia and export a lot of our commodity as well. So it's a nice high-end product, we like to think.
And judging by the moans and grumbles there, that's a huge amount of mangoes that you're sending off to the market every year. Why is it then that even as a young farmer, while you're making your way and deciding how to put together your own business, did you decide to become so involved in industry groups? And you've been recently on a tour to Southeast Asia with the Agriculture Minister and the government looking at markets. You're heavily involved in industry groups. What started all of that for you?
Look, I suppose seeing what my parents, you know, have done over the years, they've always been giving back to the industry and the community that's given them so much. So you sort of take a leaf out of their book. But also I think, you know, there's so much passion in young people in agriculture, you know, at the moment. They really need to capture that and capitalise on it. And, you know, I've got a huge belief that this industry can go from strength to strength if we can get some of these things across the line that we've been talking about. And the future for the industry is really bright, I feel.
Is it confronting, or is it a different experience when you're a young person walking into a room with, say, some of the older heads trying to get a good outcome for your industry?
Yeah, look, it's probably a bit more confronting to them. Having someone walk in the room half their age, telling them what probably they don't want to hear sometimes, but that's the reality that Australian mango farmers are facing and the potential that this industry has. So, you know, when the difficult conversations need to be had, it doesn't matter if I'm standing across the table from someone my age or someone twice my age, you always show respect, but you have to have those conversations.
Really interesting thoughts. What's next then? What are you lobbying for at the moment? What does the mango industry in Australia need?
Look, we're lobbying for a number of things at the moment, but the industry really believes that to take the next big step forwards, we need better market access protocols to China, Korea and Japan. And if we could achieve that, it'll transform our industry to something that people wouldn't believe.
And so what do you mean like that? So you've got the fruit, you've got the market ready to buy that, but you just need the rules around sending that fruit from here to there to be workable for you as an industry? Is that what you're trying to get?
Yeah, so we would like a bit better market access protocol so we can get more fruit into those markets. So we currently have access, but it's through vapor heat treatment and area freedom of certain pests and diseases, where that's really hard for some of our growers to achieve throughout Australia. So we'd like to use some of the new technologies like irradiation to be able to achieve those market access protocols, and then that would open up a huge amount of fruit to supply those markets.
Well, I hope the politicians that have attended here today and also those walking past us, you get a chance to get in their ear and talk to them about some of these issues. And I'm sure you're going to be talking about some of these issues for a long time, given how young you are in an incredible industry. Congratulations on your award, Ben.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks.
And what does it... And I've just jumped in with one more question before everyone clapped. That's totally my fault. You're listening to The Country Hour. We're talking to the Young Farmer of the Year, Ben Martin. What does this award mean to you, actually, in terms of winning it and being recognised for trailblazing at a young age in your industry?
Yeah, look, it's definitely an honour, and it's good to be recognised. You don't do any of these industry roles for the, you know, the thanks or the pat on the back, but you do it to progress the industry and make it so that we're going to have a sustainable industry, not just for my future, but for my kids' future. So that's why we do it.
Brilliant. Now I'll let everybody clap Ben Martin, our Young Farmer of the Year. Brilliant. You're listening to The Country Hour, Warwick Long with you live from Parliament House. You can hear the bells in the background as people move around and will vote on the future of the nation. So many decisions about agriculture actually made in the halls around here, and I'm sure that's to the frustration of some of the people in the room with us today. But it is important to also recognise the good stories in agriculture and the winners at an event like today. Our Rural Community Leader of the Year is a West Australian. So we've already gone from Tasmania with our Farmers of the Year. We've been up to Bowen in Queensland with our Young Farmer of the Year, with our Community Leader of the Year. Let's go to West Australia now with someone with a very big passion for getting jobs in agriculture and also the role of women as well in agriculture. It's Jackie Jarvis from Margaret River. Congratulations, Jackie.
Thank you, Warwick. Huge surprise, but thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your efforts behind the community and what do you think helped you win this award?
Yeah, look, I mean, again, people talk about a team effort. Like, I was lucky enough to lead an organisation called the RRR Network, the Rural Regional Remote Women's Network in WA, and had a really supportive board. And we had the opportunity to go out to our massive subscriber base and say to women, what is it that you need us to do? And we kept coming back the same time and time again. Women want leadership opportunities, they want professional development, they want career development. We were then also really fortunate the Government of Western Australia entrusted us to actually go out and be part of their Women's Voices project. And again, we got to travel around Western Australia talking to women. And we just really saw this lack of good career building opportunities for women in regional areas. You know, obviously WA, small population, massive land mass, really hard to find good career building work for men or women, but particularly for women.
It's incredible that you're up here talking to us today about this issue, which is clearly gaining a lot of traction. The recent Rural Woman of the Year from that award was talking a lot about similar things, the idea that there needs to be more work about building career pathways for people in some of the remote communities, especially if we want more people to move there.
Absolutely. I mean, we worry about the rural decline. If we can't find good careers for women, particularly when we're returning to the workforce, perhaps after having a family, childcare is a massive issue. If you live in a town of 300 people, it's incredibly hard to access good childcare, long childcare. So it's really important. And what I find, look, the stuff Joe Palmer is doing with remote pointer roles is fantastic. I find employers who've employed someone in the past are really happy to offer workplace flexibility if someone relocates, but it's particularly women getting back into the workforce. How do you get that first opportunity on the corporate ladder if you happen to live regionally?
What are some of the answers then? What are some of the solutions to this to start making this happen? And then I'd imagine rural communities unlocking some talent and some people that can do great things for them if they have the opportunity.
Look, there are some really quite easy fixes. If large employers, government included, actually take some of the barriers off about where jobs are advertised. You know, I see lots of entry-level administration jobs, particularly in government organisations, and those women seem to be then trapped in those roles forever. There are jobs that are advertised in Perth or every capital city that are not client-facing, that don't need people to be in a staff leadership position, that could be done remotely. You know, I meet graphic designers, I meet women with media background, I meet women with engineering background, women with PhDs. I was talking last night to a West Australian woman who has a PhD in animal sciences. Her biggest challenge is the closest daycare centre is 45 kilometres away. That's a 90 kilometre round trip if she wants to work from in her business or in a consultancy role. Her biggest challenge is childcare is not tax deductible. So unless you are able to access an approved daycare centre and get a government subsidy, if she employs someone in her own home and gets an au pair in her own home, it's not a tax deduction. It's not seen as a legitimate business expense.
So the solutions there, we just need hopefully some of the people around here to start listening, is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's some pretty simple things. Market Check, who sponsored my award at my table, they mentioned that they know someone in, I think it was regional New South Wales, who's created a work hub in a regional town. Great. You've got to drive to actually drop your children at childcare. Let's create shared office spaces. Let government create shared office spaces so that women from different government organisations can actually work in one location near their childcare centre.
And it's just unfathomable to think of how much talent is out there that's probably literally untapped. Jackie, it's been incredible to talk to you. It's really interesting. I love your thought on this. We've had a Farmer of the Awards again, 2019 Farmer of the Year. Susie Daly's the second woman in a decade to win this award. Do we need to start thinking about not changing the awards, but making sure women start putting their hand up for awards like this as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, I didn't know I'd been nominated for this award. It was a huge surprise. So, you know, my challenge to you all is when next year's award comes around, look at all the women and the men you know who are doing great stuff and nominate them for awards, because recognition is really important. If we don't have a voice, then we can't change things.
Well done. Thank you very much for talking to us, Jackie.
Thanks.
Jackie Jarvis, the Rural Community Leader of the Year, speaking to us here on the Country Hour. This is about all the time we have for you from Parliament House. It's been lovely to not only show the people in the room today a little bit about what the Country Hour does, but also bring some of these awards around the country to you on the Country Hour programs today. If you want to read more about these wonderful winners, you certainly can do so on our website, abc.net.au/rural. Go there, read about the winners, share it on social media, tell people these great agricultural stories. But for now, that's it. See you later from Canberra.